Thank you, Britt. Thank you to all of you for being here this evening. Before we start, I was handed an announcement that I didn't have time to get on the overhead. The memorial services for Paul Bennett Evans will be Saturday at 4 o'clock at Emmanuel Baptist Church. And also, the visitation for Chelsea Sailors will be tomorrow night from 6 to 8 at Spry Funeral Home. And then the funeral services will be at 11 o'clock on Tuesday at Spry here in Athens. I hope that we are ready to study together. I hope that as every time I stand before you, it's beneficial for us to study together. It's always my prayer and my hope that it's beneficial for us to study together. I first stood in this pulpit in 2009, almost 9 years ago. I looked at it last night in April in 2009. And because of that opportunity that the elders gave me, I've had the other opportunities to go and speak at other congregations, to be with them and study with them and to be encouraged by them, just as I'm encouraged by you each time that I have this opportunity. I counted last night 120 times I've stood in a pulpit of some type. You can't usually tell, by the way, that I present my lessons, but that was big. I was excited to realize that. As many of you know, Angela and I have recently sold our house, and we are about to be building a new house here in town. Because of that time that we're going to be dedicating to that and some personal obligations that we have, family and work, this is going to be the last time that I stand in this pulpit for a while. We're going to be taking a break from preaching. And I just want to express my thanks because I don't know when I'll be standing in this pulpit again. My thanks to the elders for the opportunities that they've given me. And that also includes Charlie, who meant so much to me, as the other three men do. The example that they set, not only for us as preachers, but for all of us as members, is something that's important. I'm thankful for the other preachers, for Brother Guy and the other men who share this pulpit, for the encouragement that they are to me, for the wisdom that they share, and the support that they give. Thankful for my wife, who sits by herself with not only our children, but many times someone else's while I stand in this place. And I'm thankful for you. I'm thankful for the encouragement that you give, the support that you give for not only me, but for all of the men who stand here and present lessons from this pulpit, for the help that you give in encouragement, in criticism. It's all beneficial for us. It's beneficial for us as a whole. And I thank you for that. So tonight, as many times I often do, as I was thinking about this lesson, I thought about the time that I've spent, the time that I've spent preparing for sermons or presenting sermons, time that I spent working as a part-time preacher. And as I often do, I wanted to present some thoughts from what I've experienced. Tonight I'd like for us to think about some lessons from the pulpit, some lessons that I've learned as someone who stands before a crowd. I want us to turn in our Bibles and study together as we think about some of these things. Now, tell me if you've heard this one before. A preacher stands up before you And he says, you know, as I was thinking about this sermon, I couldn't think about what I wanted to preach about. And so I really just looked at myself, and I decided that I would preach a sermon to myself, one that I needed to hear. Hopefully some of you will need to hear it as well. I don't know how many times I've heard that in my life. But I can speak from experience in saying that oftentimes that's what preachers do. I think about what I need in my life, what I need to fix, what I need to correct, what I need to do better. And that's what I study and that's what I present. I think that's something that can be beneficial to all of us, is to preach to yourself first. No matter who you are, where you are on your spiritual journey, we first need to preach to ourselves. We need to make sure that we are prepared. Paul, when he writes to his first letter to the Corinthians, 1 Corinthians chapter 9, verses 26 and 27, he says, therefore, I run thus, not with uncertainty. Thus I fight, not as one who beats the air, but I discipline my body and bring it into subjection, lest when I have preached to others, I myself should become disqualified. Paul says, I want to prepare myself so that when I go out and preach to others, it doesn't disqualify me. Others don't say, well, hang on a second. How is it that you can stand there and preach to me when I know that you do this? And that doesn't just apply to preachers. It applies to all of us. It applies to all of us as we go out into the world. We need to prepare ourselves. We need to bring ourselves into subjection so that when we go out as a member of the church, we don't disqualify ourselves. We don't lead someone away because of the example that we set. We need to be living in such a way that we're not embarrassed to talk to someone about God. So as a preacher or as a member, we always need to preach to ourselves first. Because we need to realize that being a preacher doesn't mean that you're better than somebody else. You know, lots of times there is a struggle. The other men may not experience this, but there is a struggle for me to not be proud, to not be arrogant. You know, I'm one of the ones that stands up here. I'm one of the ones that gets to tell you what you're doing wrong and the things that you need to fix, the things you need to change in your life. Paul, when he writes to the Philippians, Philippians chapter 2, he says, do nothing for selfish or empty conceit, but with humility of mind, regard one another as more important than yourselves. There's an attitude that we need to have. It's not an attitude of arrogance or an attitude of pride. Not an attitude to say, I know more than you know, or I'm smarter than you. I understand this more accurately than you do. That's why I stand here. We as members also shouldn't have that attitude. We shouldn't go into the world, tell people how smart we are, how we have a better understanding of the Bible than they do. But that's what we do so often. We tell others, well, I'm actually a member of the church. You're not. The sign in front of my building says Church of Christ. I don't know if you know it or not, but that means I'm smarter than you. That means I have a better understanding than you do. We want to lead people. We want to guide people. We want to bring people here. We're not going to do it by telling others how we're smarter than they are. We're not going to do it by demeaning someone and questioning their intelligence. We want to lead by example in the life that we live. And so often we go through life comparing ourselves to others. That's kind of human nature. 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 12 says, "For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves. But they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise." And that's a whole lot of themselves. But what Paul is telling the Corinthians is that, you know what? When all you do is worry about the other person and how you're better than they are, that's not wise. That's not the way to succeed. When we're measuring ourselves back to the world, just making sure that we're better than they are, we go away from God just like they do. When we compare ourselves to the world and to those who are in it, it only leads us to trouble. Another thing that I've come to realize is that people know who you are. You know, as someone who stands in this pulpit from time to time, my name and phone number are on a bulletin that was sitting in the pews this morning. My picture's on the website. People know who I am, even if they've never met me. We did some work on a house last year, a home that we were building. The subcontractor came out that I'd never met before. At least I thought I hadn't. He came out and I introduced myself. He said, "Yeah, I know you. You preach over there at O'Neill." I said, "Yeah, I do." I said, "Now, how do I know you?" He said, "Well, you preached where I go to church one time." I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Well, I'm sorry, I don't remember you. Where do you go?" He said, "Well, I go up to Pettisful." I said, "Well, yeah." I said, "Wow, you've got a good memory." "So, you know, it's been several years since I preached there." I said, "Actually, I think it was about 2010. And he said, "Yeah, that's when it was." He said, "It was 2010. He said, "You preached on a Sunday morning." And I said, "Yeah, I sure did." He said, "Yeah, you preached a sermon about living as a child." And I said, "Yeah, I did. What was your name again?" People know us. People know you. People know you and they've never even met you. Philippians chapter 3, verse 17 says, join together in following my examples, brothers and sisters, and just as you have us as a model, keep your eyes on those who live as we do. People recognize the preacher of a church that they've been to before. They recognize a name or a picture that they've seen. But people don't just recognize the preacher. People recognize the members. Today, with social media the way it is, you probably have someone yourself. Someone that you've never met. But you've seen their pictures online. You've seen their pictures on Facebook. You know where they eat and who they hang out with. You know the things that they like to do. You know how they spent New Year's Eve. You probably know where they go to church. And they know the same thing about you. People know us. Today more than ever, people know you. It doesn't matter where you are or what you're doing. We're influencing people around us. People that know you. I stood in line behind a man one night, at the Little Caesars on 31. He didn't know me, but I knew exactly who he was. When we stood there in line, he got aggravated. They didn't get his pizzas out there quick enough. He made a little bit of a scene, and then he left. I still remember it. I don't hold it against him, though. I mean, I've been there. We all have. But we want to live in such a way that we're influencing people for good. We want to live in such a way that when we're out and the people that know us, even though we don't know them, we're influencing them in a positive way. Because people know who we are. But here's the thing. You may not get the credit you deserve. You know, sometimes that's the way a preacher feels. Sometimes he may feel like, you know, I didn't get credit for such and such. You know, I really worked hard on that, and nobody even said thank you. Nobody even acknowledged the work that I did. I'd like to tell you a story quickly. In 2010, Samuel had just been born, and he hadn't even gone to church yet. He's about 6 weeks old, and the first time that we were going to carry him to church, I was actually preaching out at Beulah, a little congregation in West Limestone. And I no more than get up there to start preaching, and Angela has to take him out to the nursery. Annabeth is sitting on the pew. She's 3 years old. And Angela kind of gives her a little pep talk, and then she walks off to the nursery with Sam. And Annabeth is sitting there, and I can see her out of the corner of my eye, though I haven't actually made eye contact with her. And so I continue preaching there, and I make that first eye contact with her. And she's just sitting there just staring me down. She looks up at me and kind of goes, just like that. And for the next 20 minutes, every time I looked, there she was, giving me that little wave, like, I'm still here. I'm doing fine. most of the time when I tell that story, that's kind of the emphasis. Her sitting there by herself, waving back at me. Something that I actually remember equally as much about that story. And that's my wife taking our son out and missing the whole thing. And that's what happens a lot of times with everyone. You know, there's things in your life, there's things that you do at church, there's work that you do. That nobody's going to give you credit for. That nobody's going to remember. Nobody's going to say thank you. You just do it. And sometimes that's the life of a Christian. To be that person that does things when no one is looking. 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 20 says, "For what credit is it if when we are beaten for our faults, you take it patiently? But when you do good and suffer, if you take it patiently, this is commendable before God." You know, sometimes in our life, we're going to do things that nobody recognizes. That nobody seems to care about. Things that are just an introduction to a story. And maybe it means nothing to anyone. But Peter says it means something to God. It means something when you work, even though no one says thank you. It means something when you give effort and nobody recognizes it. It means something when you give your best and it just goes by the wayside. It means something to God. For all the things that we do that no one says thank you for. Colossians chapter 3, verse 23 says, "Whatever you do, do it heartily as to the Lord and not to men." We're not working to be pleasing to men. The things that we do, we're not trying to please men. We're trying to please God. And that's something that we always have to remember. In everything that we do, not just here at the church building, but in our life every day. The final thought is to don't stop working. Don't quit doing whatever it is that you're doing to spread the borders of God's kingdom. Came across a quote the other day that made me think of our church, our group here. But not just our group, every group of God's people. It is this: without vision, people perish. Without people, the vision perishes. As a local group of God's people, we have a responsibility. We have three men that oversee this flock. And they have a great responsibility to this local group. Without vision, people perish, and it's their responsibility to provide that vision, to provide that plan for us. and how we're going to accomplish those things for God. But without people, the vision perishes. It doesn't matter what their vision is or how good their plan is. Without people to put it into practice, without someone to implement that plan, without someone to do the work, the plan perishes as well. I wonder if you've ever seen a movie from the 80s called A Field of Dreams. Ever see that movie? It's a pretty good movie. It's got Kevin Costner in it. He's a corn farmer. He starts hearing voices. You probably remember what it is the voice says to him. If you build it, he will come. He goes out and cuts his corn crop down and builds a baseball field. Sometimes I think that's how we approach church. You know, we got a pretty nice building here. Pretty new. It was brand new when we started coming to church here 10 years ago. It was nice. You know, that's how lots of local congregations approach reaching people. Well, we got a nice building. We've got the sign out front. I mean, they know what we stand for. It really kind of does it itself, right? We don't have to do anything else except just have the building and have the sign with our times of services. If you build it, they will come. Right? Jesus, in Mark chapter 16, verse 15, says, "And he said to them, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature." Christ doesn't say, if you build it, they will come. He says, go and preach. You've got a building, go get people and bring them to it. Fill it up with the way that you live. Encourage people to come and visit. Invite those friends of yours that you have and family to come and be with us. Invite your neighbors. Don't just expect them to show up. Go and get them. Verse 16 there. He tells us what to teach them once they're here. He who believes and is baptized will be saved. But he who does not believe will be condemned. There are many lessons that you can learn. No matter what it is that you're doing. But being a preacher, the thing that stands out the most is the need for salvation. The need for people to turn from the sin that they have and turn to God. If you're here this evening and you are not a Christian, you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, you know the difference between right and wrong, you know that you need to be baptized for the forgiveness of your sins, we would invite you to come. If you're here and you are a Christian, you have sin in your life or something that you need to make correction of, if there's any way that we can assist you, we would invite you to come while together we stand.